bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Photo Show from the British Tech Network. My name's Carl, and I'm here, you can see, people on video anyway, in glorious sunny Florida, and I'm sweating. It's horrible. It's terrible. But joining me this week, we have our usual panel, plus one, our wonderful guests. We have, first of all, Mr. Chris Forsman from Ars Technica up in Chicago. How are you doing?
Not too bad today. Weather is quite nice. For a pleasant change.
Also joining us, we have from Birmingham, Mr. Ewan Rankin. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, mate. How are you doing? You look a bit blotchy at the minute. Your bandwidth is slowly dropping off. You must be on Comcast.
Oh, I don't know. I have no clue what we're on here. No. I just plugged it in and it worked. That was good enough for me.
Cool. That'll do.
And just joining us, we have Mr. Alex Fox. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you, robotically answered. You having a nice time?
Oh, it's wonderful. That's wonderful. Lots of drink, lots of amusement parks, and lots of food.
A bit like being at home, then.
Yeah, pretty much. And join us for the first time ever, we have Mr. Dave Dugdale from learningdslrvideo.com. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great from sunny Colorado. The sun's just coming up, actually.
Stuff. So what do you do over there on learningdslrvideo.com?
It's basically, it started out kind of as a hobby site a couple of years ago. I bought my first DSLR, it was a Canon Rebel T2i, and it's basically a brain dump. Every time I'd learn something, I would put it down and into a quick video and put it up on the web, and then in case I wanted to go back, like if I were to test something like highlight tone priority on or off and what the difference was, so then people started watching it more and more, so I just kept making the videos. I'm just mostly an amateur at heart, although I'm starting to get a little bit of paid work.
Well, paid, that's professional.
Paid is as paid.
Don't tell Missy.
No. So let's start off with some news this week. First up, Sony has announced a new pair of cameras, the A37 and the NEX-F3. God, they're such high memory names, I tell you. First off, the NEX-F3 has 16 megapixels, ISO of up to 1600, 1080i video, and apparently a strange auto-framing portrait mode that detects faces and crops the image to apply the rule of thirds. Sounds weird. Oof. And that's going to cost around $600.
Does it stretch so that one eye's on one rule of third and the other eye's on the other rule of third?
It's called the Sony Picasso camera.
Your mouth's on the lower third and your nose is on the upper third.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure whether I could warp something by the end of the show.
I'm sure you could.
Warp a portrait.
Oh, dear. So that sounds a very weird piece of technology in there to me. Because it means you can just, apparently you can just point at anyone and all your photos are going to start coming out looking the same.
Damn you. I mean, it's a good looking camera. It looks like the AE series. It's nice. They've always looked pleasant. I've had a little play with the A55, as I keep saying. I need to have a better go with them now because the last time I played with the A series was about 2 years ago. So I'm doing them no favours by saying, well, I played with one and I thought it was crap because that was 2 years back. So I'm going to reserve judgment on this one. I'm going to go to a Photoshop and have a play, definitely. My point would be, if we're talking about the technology of the camera is suggesting that it has the ability to apply rule of thirds to a portrait. Your rule of thirds for an upright tree with a wall that disappears in the background, with a lake that's, or a horizon that's at one third, is quite easy to do with the eye. I'm not sure you could do it with a computer. But if you're talking about applying rule of thirds to a portrait, you're talking about having a feature at a cross point of the thirds. You're not going to tell me that this thing is going to magically resize your face so that multiple third points are created against facial features. It's not possible.
Right. I don't think that necessarily it has to work the way you're suggesting for it to work. I mean,
we're just going to pick an eye and stick it in one corner then. I mean, it really is Picasso mode.
Sure. I don't think that's an invalid way to approach composition using rule of thirds for a portrait. You pick a feature and place it at one of the intersections.
I've got to have a plan.
You can use the if you've got the third lines, you can use those to align the portrait. One of the ways that I approach teaching the rule of thirds is as a tool to help you avoid the bullseye effect. You know, so where a lot of people will just take their subject, regardless of the background, and just put it right in the middle because that's where the focus point is. There's like that little, you know, almost like a targeting thing, you know, and they're sighting their target and they just shoot, right, without thinking. So then you've got a head right in the middle of the picture, and then you've got a little bit of body down here, and then you've got all this background up here.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And so, you know, the rule of thirds is one way to show people that you can balance a composition without just putting everything right in the middle, and to get them away from that type of thinking, which it's just, frankly, it's just so common. I mean, if you look at your if you just go through a stack of your family snapshots, I have no doubt you'll see a bunch of stuff with whatever is important is right in the middle, and then all this stuff around it that's totally irrelevant. So.
Right. Dave, when you're shooting your video, do you apply the rule of thirds to your shots?
I do. I mean, again, I'm more of a beginner, but I've been doing that for the last couple of years. And now I guess I'm getting to the point now where I don't think about it as much. And I definitely do break the rules a lot. I'm putting things in different locations in the frame that just look good to me. So I'm starting to break the rules at this point, but I think it's a great place to start. I think it really helps you when you're starting to, and especially with these cameras now, you can actually turn that grid on when you're doing the video, and you can just line up the horizon or whatever you're doing on one of those lines.
Oh, also in the article, it mentions these cameras are having 1080i video. So what's the difference between 1080i and 1080p, just in case anyone doesn't know?
Again, I'm not an expert here, but I understand that interlace, basically, I think it skips every other line, whereas progressive, I think, does every line. I could be totally wrong on that, but basically, when it comes to video, everything that goes up on the web is going to end up being progressive. So for me, if you get a camera that shoots 1080p or 720p, it's just one less thing to have to worry about, the whole de-interlacing process that you'd have to do in your nonlinear editor. Because I've got an old Sony camcorder that shoots... I think it's 1080i. Yeah, 1080i. And then you have to worry about that step. But if you get something with P, then as a beginner, it's a lot easier. It's just something you don't have to worry about.
It's all about
that. Yeah. Which of these recording video types, what's more beneficial for compression? Is it better just to go straight for P because therefore the compression is only one step, or does it not make any difference?
In terms of compression, I I'm more of a novice, but I don't think it has anything to do with compression. I don't think interlace versus progressive is going to be any different in terms of progression. Compression. I don't know. I don't want to say anything wrong. Sorry, I don't know the answer.
it can aid compression to have progressive video. Because what happens when you're doing interlace, it's just like you said, it scans every other line. So you've got your rectangular array, and it's going to do line 1, 3, 5, you know, it's going to scan all those lines with a sensor, and then you're going to have like this image that's like striped. And then the next frame, it's going to do 2, 4, 6, 8, and it's going to have the other ones. And so it keeps alternating back and forth. When you have a full progressive frame, the way that the compression algorithms work is it looks for the changes between the frames. And if you've got a full frame to work from instead of all these interlaced frames, it makes it easier to I'm not sure I'm explaining this very well, but it's like perceptual. So it takes into account like how your brain works when it sees moving images. And right. So, it can be more, I guess, intelligent about how it compresses certain data when it's got the full image to work with at once than with alternating fields.
So it's the way the digital TVs work. If the background's not changing, they don't refresh that part of the background. Whereas exactly. The old TVs, they worked in lines and they refreshed every time it went round.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. We've actually learned something. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
So that was the NEX F3 camera. They also released in the A37, which is an SLR-styled camera, again 60 megapixel, and uses Sony's transparent fixed mirror technology, which I think you guys poo-pooed a little while back. That also shoots ISO up to 1600, and also 1080i video again.
Yeah, what's odd is that... Sorry, I reviewed the A77 back last year, and it was really odd. Is they when you with that particular camera, you can shoot at very high ISOs, like 6400, in picture mode. But when you go to video mode, they don't give it to you. And I always wondered why you can only go up to 1600 in the video mode, which I thought was kind of odd. It's almost like, hey, don't go any higher because it's going to get really noisy or something. I have no idea why they did that.
Well, that's all. That's the whole sort of reason for having sort of the mirrorless model, anyway, isn't it? Because you get less grain because of you know, just the way the thing's designed. You're quite right to say why would you not be able to do that in video unless there's some electronics that's reducing it, and video is far too fast for it to reduce it on every frame.
Would that be because of the interlacing?
It could be. Is this one an eye as well? It might well be.
They're both eyes.
Ah, okay, yeah, that does make sense. Well, we're on a roll.
Well, so is Sony, because apparently rumours have leaked of their upcoming X99 as well. It's going to have 24 megapixel full frame sensor. Go on, Chris, ask why many, so many.
Why so many?
102 focus points, a 3 million pixel HD electronic viewfinder, will support 24 different video recording formats. That's a lot. And has a variety of screen style filters. Estimated cost will be around $2,800, which is probably about a tenner in English money.
18,000 yuan.
Does this? So again, obviously, this is a rumor of a speculation of a leaked possible thing coming out. Does this interest anyone? This camera?
Or not meaning to be completely rude. I'm slightly disappointed because Sony had a sort of 24, I don't know if it was 24.3, but something around there. And they've had that at that sort of, probably slightly cheaper, and they've had that sort of resolution for 2-3 years. And with the others coming out, especially Nikon, but with even Canon, with other manufacturers now coming out with, if you want to play the numbers game, with coming out with numbers far, far higher than this for similar prices. I mean, what's that new, was it D800? It's, what's that? I can't even remember now. Is it £2,500? So, you know, not much more. You're getting a 36? Yeah, 36 megapixel camera made by a slightly more established photographic company. I think they may have underplayed this one a bit. I mean, it's got some nice things, but this 102 focus points, isn't that the same cross focus points as the D800's got? You know, so.
The D800's got 51, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry, there was one we looked at recently because we were talking about cross focus.
Yeah, cross focus is one horizontal, one vertical.
But it was an actual camera that was, you know, sent out with 102 cross focal points quite recently. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
So basically, they've taken, you know, some nice specs, but they're not that much better than what they did a couple of years ago. And this is a really, really long awaited update, isn't this? Isn't this the one that, you know, they've been talking about more or less since they launched the A77? Or is it the one before that? There was one that, you know, everyone was saying, because they were talking about replacing it literally a couple of months after launching it. I think it was so. I'm pretty sure it is. Anyway, I'm slightly disappointed. I mean, it's probably a very nice camera, but I think they're falling behind a bit.
Well, these are just rumours, remember, so they could be completely wrong.
Well, normally rumours overestimate, not underestimate.
True.
It's not a very good rumour, otherwise, is it?
I'm quite surprised at 24 video recording formats, though. I wasn't even aware there was that many.
Honestly. Oh, mate, there's lots more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, built into cameras, though.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, normally you'll find that they'll pick one or two, and that's it. You won't find a huge amount of diversity in different codec separations as well. They'll go for, even if they do one format in three different codecs, it's an enormous amount.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get it. But
I know there's some problems too, because like, for instance, I think some of the, maybe it's like the 5D Mark III or something only records full HD 1080p video in 24 frames a second, which is a real problem for
Americans.
It's a real problem for Europe because...
aren't we 24 and you're 29, or is that the other way around?
Well, we're 30 for video, but there's an easy pull down from 24 frames to 30 for because they do it all the time for movies.
Isn't it rounded
up? 24 frames per second is common for film movies, but the issue is when you convert that to in Europe in your PAL system, you use 25 frames a second, and that actually is a real hassle. My understanding.
Well, yeah, because in the old days you had to convert it to AVI and then convert it back again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a bit of a problem. But it's strange that they're doing this via hardware, though. That's the thing. I mean, hardware. They're probably only recording it in one, as much as a lossless compressed file type as they can, and they've got onboard conversion, which is obviously you pick what it wants to do, and it does it on the fly as you're recording it. I mean, maybe this is an attempt to say to people, you know what, you don't need to buy expensive software. You don't need a really, really heavy-duty PC. If you want to record something and stick it straight onto YouTube or straight into whatever piece of software you're using, this will save you all that time and effort, and you should be able to just go straight to the editing phase rather than the, you know, redoing it phase. So,
I mean, there's no list here of the processor in the camera, but I would have thought that you'd need a significant weight processor to start thinking about of output change or fly on the fly processing. And I would have thought you'd probably select your recording format prior to start.
Yeah, well.
Dave, what's your recording format of choice?
Well, for me, it's really easy because, sorry, I'm just getting over a cold. It's really easy for me because everything that I do ends up on the web. And YouTube, Vimeo, you name it, pretty much everybody's going to take your file, whatever you upload, like an MP4, and they're all going to transcode it to 24 frames a second anyway, no matter where you are. So for me, I don't ever do anything for broadcast, so I never go to 30. I always either, the only two things I shoot at are 24, which is actually 23.976. And then the other one is 60 frames per second, 720, when I want to do mostly slow motion and I want to slow things down in post.
Good. Yeah, because my stepdad shoots a lot of DSLR video, and I think he's struggling to figure out what format to shoot in.
Yeah, the only time I ever shoot at like 30 frames per second, again, is more for when I want to slow something down slightly in post. Like I'll go from 30 frames down to 24, and it gives it a very nice, smooth, even. Because a lot of times I'll put, I don't know if you watched one of my videos that I did where I compared the D800 to the Canon 5D Mark III, and I had them on turntables. And sometimes what I'll do is to get it, the turntable is not totally smooth, but when you slow something down ever so slightly, it gives it a much smoother look to it in terms of motion. Because my turntable is kind of cheap and it doesn't turn perfectly. So what I'll do is shoot at 30 and then just slow it down to 24 and it gives it a very nice smooth look to it.
Oh, good. Good tip. Right, moving on, next story, Canon. Are reportedly moving all camera building operations over to robot control. Human beings will no longer supposedly touch these devices by 2015. Very sci-fi. Apparently the current staff will be moved into other parts of the organization, where apparently they'll be crushed up and used to feed the robots.
robots eat old people's medicine. I thought this was common knowledge.
So, what do you think about this? 2015, all your Canon pieces, Chris and Ewan, will be made by robots.
I'm happy as long as they just remember to put the black tape over the sensors.
Oh yeah,
for light leaks and so on.
That's the only thing I have.
I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords.
Actually, when I read this story, I was kind of surprised that I kind of figured it was all done by robots already.
That's exactly what I thought when I read it.
That was the second thing I was going to say. I'm really out. My joke's gone, and my proper point.
Is this? I mean, are they talking about replacing the entire process? Because I know a lot of the circuit boards and so on are made up by remote soldering systems and that kind of stuff. But the actual problem of actually physically getting the latches and stuff like that to click and doors tested and that kind of stuff, I'd struggle to see how they would take components necessarily and fit them the way that a body fits together. It doesn't seem that the individual components would be very easy, but the fitting together of the camera as a final snapping process, I think would be quite tough for a robot to do. But I mean,
well, they must have some sort of resistance meter on it, mustn't they? Mm. I mean, I really hope this isn't just for money's sake. I really hope this is for what they believe would give a better, more, you know, complete article at the end, less likely to break down, more. Because if this is about taking people's jobs, we're talking about most of these things are built in factories where people are getting paid what we as Westerners would be absolutely disgusted by in the first place. So if they're doing that just to sort of stop the, you know, the minuscule amounts of money that they're laying out on that, I'd be really, really disappointed. So I just hope, here we go, my politics, but it's just a point to say I hope it's because of they think it's going to produce a better camera rather than anything else.
Well, I think it's interesting that they're talking about in the story that the move is as a result of soaring costs in the yen, in Japan. Other companies have moved production out of Japan, and they haven't. They've stuck in there, and they've said that they're not redundant. There's no redundancies of people. This is it sounds like it's a quality move more than a finance-driven move, most definitely, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give you that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Foxconn finishing school, says the chat room.
Now, once your cameras have been made by robots, there was an article in Petapixel this week about maybe humans might not even have to take the photographs anymore because they can just be rendered on a computer screen using free software. Does this terrify anyone out there? I mean, probably he's not going to be able to do weddings, not yet anyway. But just taking pictures of products and creating them in the computer and then putting them anywhere you want.
Well, it's not something that's new. It's just something that's, I think they believe will be more accessible to the average person in the street, whoever that happens to be. I'm not sure who that person we talk about is. Years and years ago, I had a friend that owned a metal working company, and they made some really elaborate stuff. And he did some pictures, but to be honest, they were no good, and I really couldn't be bothered to go and work in a dirty factory. So I sat here, and I made up some really, really quite clever stuff, even if I say so myself, and I didn't even start with a picture. I started with various shapes. I made them metallic, I played with them, I bent them, I did this, that, and the other, and at the end of it, it looked like I'd done some really, really, really clever photography. There was not a single part of that image that was ever photographed, and it wasn't a single part of that image had ever actually existed. It wasn't even a photo off the internet that I changed. So it's not new. It's interesting to say, not very long ago, I was watching a program about modern video techniques for making cartoons. I call them cartoons, animations, whatever. And their animations are so lifelike now, but they realize that if they make it too lifelike, people don't like it, so they don't watch the films they make. So there's actually they're actually going backwards to make things look less lifelike, to make humans feel more friendly with them. So like I'm saying, the technology for actually creating a human being's face in video, which obviously is like a lot more complicated than in stills, has been around for a long time. So it's not new, it's just made accessible. That's sort of the point I'm trying to make.
Isn't that that thing you described, it's called the uncanny valley, where something in our brains triggers, it looks real.
Oh, that's Carl gone then.
Well, it's not real, so we don't like it.
Oh, he's back again.
Oh, I'm here. Hello.
Hello, mate. No, you froze for a second there.
All right.
Unless it was my brain. I think the thing that's scary in that article is the fluid dynamics of the water, in inverted commas, in that effectively it shows you a piece of rendering software where someone's got the 3D model of the iPhone and he's dropping it into water, in inverted commas, and it's actually just a white block that then when the iPhone hits it, it starts to ripple and act like water, and the fluid dynamics are perfect. And then it takes all of the whiteness of that and turns it into clear water. And it's water. I look at it and I go, it's water. And that's all done in the home. But I mean, there was a film out a little while ago, wasn't there? Monsters, is it? Is it Monsters? Where the guy went to Costa Rica and shot a lot of the footage, and then went back in his bedroom, did it on an iMac, finished the whole movie off on an iMac with all the generation of the monsters, the whole thing.
Yeah, and he won loads and loads of awards for visual effects. It wasn't like it was just because it was a good film.
And it was his bedroom. It was his mum and dad's bedroom. Yeah, it's the world is the amateurs now. Most definitely, it's not the professionals. You don't need vast budgets, and you don't need, you know, data centers and that kind of stuff that stretch for miles. The stuff that Pixar was doing 10 years ago is now $39.99
in your local store. I would say cost wise, probably still cheaper to drop a mocked up iPhone 5 into a thing of water and take a picture.
Yeah, it might survive as well.
Well, I'm sure it's a mocked up, you know, I'm sure they make mocked up plastic ones that look like that. Whenever I've done electronic shoots, it's always been a box with lots of very nice bits of plastic on the front that looks like the screen's working. It's never been the full thing, especially when I throw them about and chuck them in the air to try and take a moving picture of them.
There's a lot of those systems that are in stores as dummies are actually made of wood, because wood's similar weight to the feel of the finished components. I remember doing some stuff for Crown years ago. Crown used to make CD players, portable CD players, when they had the old Walkmans out, and this was very good, but all of their mock-ups were made out of wood, and they were polished and finished off with lacquers and stuff like that, because the actual feel of them was the same because of the density of the wood.
Sure. Have you ever done food photography?
No, I haven't, but is that all plastic?
You would not believe some of the things that they use, and you know, I've done some of it, and they go, don't touch, don't eat that, for God's sake. You know, you pick up something and you think, oh, that looks nice. And some of it is, I mean, it's literally poisonous, some of the stuff.
Yeah, they spray it with lacquers and stuff.
Yeah, but it's not even the real food. I mean, I was shooting something, or I was helping someone shoot something, and it was horrible fish and chipsy sort of thing. But there was mashed potato, but the mashed potato was made of some chemical compound, and the ice cream was made of something else, and it was like, don't even touch that stuff, it will kill you. And I just imagined that they just like kept replacing plates with fresh plates of food as it started to go off a bit. But no, it didn't even start off being in the food in the first place. It was quite an eye-opener. Maybe one day I should do some research and let people know what people use for various props, because it's quite interesting.
So Dave, Chris, does this rendering idea fill you with dread?
Me personally, I think it's kind of like, you know, you're always going to have animated movies and stuff like that, but you're always going to have real actors. So for me, I think it's, you know, I think it's great. I don't think it's going to replace anybody anytime soon, but I think there's always a place for both.
I agree.
That's good. There we go. So you're not worried. That's good. Both photographers shouldn't be worried yet. this one's for you, Ewan, actually. A new Kickstarter project going by the name of Focus Shifter, or Lens Shifter. The creators can't decide on a name at this point. It's a very simple idea to help all you budding DSLR video guys out there. It's a simple little device that loops around the focus ring on your camera and adds an extended arm to allow much easier focus pulling. The project needs to get going $19,000, and as of today, it was up to $15,000 plus. Ewan, is this what you've been looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I said a few weeks ago, you know, the key part I find trouble with is pulling focus on longer lenses, because it doesn't seem to want to, you know, haven't got that one rocker switch like you've got on a video camera that lets you zoom in and zoom out easily. And I find controlling focus quite difficult. It needs, I've suggested in the past to get a rubber band and tie some kind of stalk on and see if there's some way that you can get it to lash on and work. This is a great idea. It's $45. Which $45 is 25 quid over here. You know, it's a good price. And I was wondering, actually, because we've got David on today, who's far more adept at video stuff than the rest of us, is there any trick that you do? You know, is there a cheaper option to this that you've got used to using, David, or you know, is there a household implement that works really well, like a can opener or something like that on the side, and just rubber band it around the other side?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, I have a real run and gun type of style. So it's pretty rare that I pull focus. But when I do, my trick right now that I do is I find the focus point for A, and then I put my finger at the top of the lens, and then I find the focus for B, and then I start on B, and then I just go up to the top. I know it's like the cheapest way you can do it, but it works. It works really well. But I have been looking for something like this, and but my problem is with my run and gun style. It needs to be, you know, because what I usually do is I'll have my on my right hand, I have the camera. And then what sometimes I'll do is I'll take a friction arm, and then I'll take it off of the plate, and it'll come out. I know this is an audio podcast and I'm showing you video, but basically what it does is it separates your hands further. So your shot is a lot more steady compared to just hand holding something very close. And so what happens is what I'd like to do is get some sort of follow focus with that same type of configuration where I can either turn it like this, you know, like a dial on the side or something like this. So to be honest, I have not gotten into that much yet. I just do it the cheap way.
Now, just for everyone's benefit there, did you notice that David's holding his hands like a steering wheel?
Aha! What are you leading up to, Ewan?
Oh, I keep telling you, I've got my steering wheel. I haven't finished messing with it yet, but I bought a steering wheel off eBay.
Is that the fig rig from Manfrotto?
No, I bought a steering wheel. I actually bought a car steering wheel. Yeah.
Because Manfrotto makes something just like that, and I'm going to get one of those in too, because I don't know if you guys follow Freddie Wong. He has a channel on YouTube. He's got millions of subscribers, but they use it all the time, and they get incredibly good, stable results off of it. It's just insane how good that thing looks.
Is it more than $20?
Yes, it is more than $20.
Well, $300. Mine was $20. There you go.
Excellent.
Well, I think you should spend $1,000 on the DSLR and $100,000 on one of them rigs that go along with air control and the hydraulics. I mean, you save all that money on the camera, you might as well spend it on something else.
Well, the thing is, though, Alex, based on my day rate, I'm probably about to spend $1,000 sitting frigging around with it and trying to get it to work before I go, it doesn't bloody work.
Takes about 5 minutes, then.
You get it work. We know you was an avid Blue Peter watcher when you was younger. You can just get some pipe cleaner, some sticky back plastic, and you'll knock something.
Yeah. Fairy liquid bottles. They don't make fairy liquid bottles that are cylindrical anymore. That's the problem with society today.
You have to go and buy kebab shop chili sauce bottles. That's the answer.
Yeah, they're good.
Chris, you've been keeping quiet. Do you like the idea of this focus puller?
Yeah, I mean, it's... I've seen some people use sort of like hand rigged ones for DSLRs, and it's commonly used in film shooting and even high end video shooting. You know, when you're tracking moving subjects and things like that. So, I mean, it just I think it's just an idea that makes sense, and you know, it'll save people from trying to, you know, rig up their own that maybe aren't as steady or as well made or, you know, as functional. So I think it's a great idea.
Absolutely. Well, I certainly look at getting one when it's finally done. If it goes into production, they're still $4,000 short at the moment. So
It's a lot of $45 increments. 100 of them.
Mm. Well, we've probably got them at least one more.
Yeah, I'll buy it.
Maybe two.
Five.
Yeah, there you go.
I've never done funded a Kickstarter project, actually. I should. Anyway. So, moving on. This week's which six tools, tips, or tricks can you suggest to capture great looking video from your DSLR camera? Stranger, we should pick this one this week, huh? So, guys, or even Dave, just on your own.
Would you like? I can give you one or two, or however, whatever you want.
Well, knock yourself out.
He can have my two.
There you go. Ewan's giving his away.
Start with six, and then we'll see where we get.
Yeah, go on. Then. So, any tips you want to pass on to our listeners?
The first tip that um, the first thing I learned when I started using my DSLR was basically you want to double, you always set your shutter speed doubled up to your frame rate. So for me, if I'm shooting at 24, then I'm going to set my shutter at 50th of a second, because there really isn't a 48th of a second. So you pick the closest thing. And that keeps your motion very smooth. It's called, I believe it's called the 180 rule or something like that. So if you're shooting, let's say, at 60 frames per second, if you're going to do slow motion like I do sometimes at 720p, that means you want to raise your shutter to 125th of a second, because again, there's no 120th of a second. So basically, when you're shooting video, and you've got the, it, and for me, I only usually do 24 or 60 frames per second, you just basically double it. So it makes it very easy to remember. And it kind of knocks one thing out of the equation. When you're shooting video on your DSLR, you don't have to worry about shutter anymore. You're going to set it, and then you're just going to be, you know, adjusting the aperture or the ISO. So one of the things that, you know, if you do make the shutter too fast, let's say you're outside and you want to get a really shallow depth of field. Well, if the person's not moving much and it's just kind of a headshot or a talking head kind of thing, well, then you can raise the shutter. You can go up quite a bit. You could, you know, I've done it 200 or 300ths of a second. As long as the person stays really still, then you're not going to get that kind of staccato look, almost like a strobe is going off in terms of movement. But if you've got your, you're filming somebody that's like playing golf and they do a golf swing and you got a really high shutter, then it's going to be very, very evident that it's a very staccato kind of look. When I say staccato, it's kind of like Saving Private Ryan and the opening scenes. It was shot that way on purpose to give it kind of a offsetting kind of irritating kind of look to it. So basically, just double your shutter.
Great.
I mean, sorry, double your frame rate.
Good tip. have you got another one?
Yeah. Next one. You know, you got, especially if you're, you know, when you're starting out like I did, and you've got like a 50 prime. I think a 50 prime. I heard many podcasts, and everybody said, if you're going to get your first DSLR, just get a 50 millimeter prime. In my case, I bought the cheapest one, which is a 1.8 from Canon, which is like $100. And it's really hard to hold that handheld steady because it doesn't have any image stabilization built into the lens. So you're pretty much going to need like a monopod. Like I own a Monfrotto monopod that's just awesome. It's just wonderful. I don't own a shoulder rig because that's kind of not my style, but you definitely want to keep the camera as steady as possible. So definitely invest in a good monopod and a good tripod. And definitely keep it still, because unless you've got image stabilization, I can't even talk this morning, sorry, image stabilization built into your lens or in your camera in terms of the Sony, because I believe it's built into the body itself, it's really hard to shoot handheld. So lock it down with something.
The one thing I was going to ask you today as well, actually, Dave, is we've talked before about use in monopods, and predominantly the other guys have always said, well, it's about just taking the weight of the lens, not a great deal more than that to give you stability. But I've got to say, with shooting the video, I find myself using a monopod far, far more than using a tripod. I get stability. Yeah. I guess, you know, I've been holding a camera for a lot of years, so I get a smooth movement when I do it anyway from practice, but I find a monopod significantly better than a tripod for just versatility more than.
Oh yeah. I've got a shoot coming up tomorrow, and it's actually a lot of the story that I'm shooting is going to take place in a kitchen where somebody's cooking, and I'm going to be moving around really quickly. And I just, no way I can just like set up a tripod and move it and then move it again and stuff like that. Or a shoulder rig. The monopod that I've got is the Manfrotto monopod, and it actually at the base it has 3 feet. So you can actually has a sticking point right in the middle. And if you wanted to, and I've done interviews like this, you can use a monopod. And if you get that sticking point right in the middle, you kind of use it as a tripod as long as you're not outside and it's windy or anything. But, it makes, in the past year I've had that thing. I use that thing far more than anything else. It's just wonderful device.
Comment in the chat room, what about a low-hanging weight to increase or to move the center of gravity well below the camera? Have you ever had a go at anything along those lines?
Well, one of the things I'm testing, and I think maybe where he's getting at, is kind of like a Steadicam or where you fly the camera. If that, it kind of sounds like what he's talking about, because if you put weight below it like that, it'll give, because I'm right now, actually, I've got a Blackbird stabilizer kind of Steadicam device in for review. I've reviewed a few others. The thing with those, though, is there's a huge learning curve on how to get those to fly correctly without getting it up to swaying back and forth like this. And it takes a good month or two of practice. And I'm very much an amateur at it. So I think that's kind of what he's talking about. But those are great for walking, like if you're following your talent or you're in front of them or on the side of them. Those are great devices for following people.
Right. The sports videographers they go down the touch lines with those because it keeps them from rocking backwards and forwards as they're moving.
Yeah, and those guys usually have a whole entire vest because they're wearing, they're shooting for a long period of time. Usually my shots only last like 10 or 15 seconds, so I can do it handheld, and I don't have to worry about my arm getting tired.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I mean, shaky camera is like really hard to watch.
Yeah, it is. It's like it's equivalent as having really bad audio. My next one is like use a slider or a dolly a few times in your video to reveal something. I mean, I cannot tell you the production value you will get from using a slider. And basically, it's just something like you only have to sometimes just slide like a meter or a yard or like 3 feet. And a lot of times, if you have something in the foreground, and you, even if it's all out of focus, but then you go to reveal something, I find that just increases your production value by tenfold. It's just huge. And for the investment, I mean, you can buy sliders today for like $300 which have roller bearing sliders that are very, very fluid. But yeah, that's definitely reveal something. You'll just be amazed. Your production value will go way up.
Oh yeah. Dolly shots always look, fantastic. So
yeah.
Smooth glide.
The next one is shoot with a very flat picture style, like in the Canon and the Nikon, like the D800. I use like their neutral picture style, so it's already kind of, it's not as saturated or sharp as like landscape picture style. And because when you're shooting for video, you have to remember it's like you're shooting JPEG, and everything that you do gets baked into the movie file. So your .mov or whatever the outcome of your camera is all baked in. So you can't go and change your white balance later. You can't go change a whole bunch of other stuff. So you've got to be very careful, since it's all like you put it in the oven, all the ingredients are in there, it gets baked, and you pull it out, and you can't separate them like you can in, let's say, a Lightroom with a raw file. So what I do is I turn the contrast all the way down to get the most, I guess what they call latitude in movie or dynamic range. So then in post, if you wanted to add that contrast back in, you have that option. And, one of the things I found with the D800 when I compared it to 5D Mark III is the D800 has excellent dynamic range or latitude for video, much better than the Canon 5D Mark III. However, the D800 is a bit noisier when you go above 1600 ISO. But in terms of the contrast, if you turn the contrast all the way down on both of those cameras and you compare the two, the D800 has a very nice look to it, with the neutral picture style. So turn your contrast all the way down, and then gives you the option in post to bring contrast back in.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
The next one is when you're I made this, because I come from a camcorder background, and with a camcorder, it's really easy. You just, you have this button with your finger, you can just zoom in and zoom out, and it's just a wonderful thing. But if you go watch movies, I think for the most part, I don't know if this is an I don't know, but basically if you watch movies, you won't see them ever zoom in like what you do with your home camcorder. If they're going to zoom in, they're going to do an establishing shot far away, and then they're going to cut or fade, and then they're going to bring the camera closer or zoom in with the lens and then start the next clip up again. Except for if you do like a snap zoom where you'll see it just snap within like a second, we'll go from far to near or something like that. But I think a lot of people coming from a camcorder background want that capability, but in the end, do you really use it? Because if you're trying to mimic or have your videos look more like film, film doesn't do that anyway. So they don't have zoom. Most movie sets, from my understand, mostly use primes, and they don't use zooms.
My favorite zoom is that, you know, the Alfred Hitchcock zoom, where it zooms in all the background goes
away. That's cool. I forget the name of that. There's a certain...
Yeah, it's just... I remember the first time I really saw that effect was in Poltergeist, when she's standing at the end of the hallway, and they move the camera and zoom the lens at the same time to give this strange perspective where it suddenly looks like the hallway is like...
Isn't it dolly zoom?
You know? Yeah.
I think that is the term, yeah.
Yeah, so I think you pull the top dolly back, but then you're zooming in at the same time, or the other way around, maybe.
Yeah. Mm. And either way, it just gives you this sudden... change in perspective, or, you know, like a space bending effect almost.
Could do it with a green screen now.
Have you got one more, Dave?
And the last one is in terms of image stabilization, or IS versus VR, whatever. Actually, I've got, since I am going to a full frame camera now and I can actually start buying some quality lenses, I've got three lenses coming in for review. One's the they're all 24 to 70s. One's a Canon, one's a Tamron, and I think the other one's a Sigma. And what I'm really excited about is that, you know, Canon, when they released 24 to 70 just recently, I think everybody is wanting them to add image stabilization to it for us video type guys, because again, when you don't have IS and you're hand holding, it's not very pretty sometimes. So I'm really excited. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the site F-Stoppers, Lee and Patrick over there. They did a review of the new Tamron 24-70 that has image stabilization built into it. And it looks like it works really awesome. So, and it's a lower price point than the Canon. They said it's not as sharp sometimes in some situations, but sometimes the Tamron is sharper. So I'm going to get all three of those lenses in to review. And so my tip is basically, if you can, and you're shooting video, try to get your lenses with some form of image stabilization built into them. It just really helps smooth out your handheld shots.
Is that because we had a question a few weeks ago about using image stabilization when it's on a tripod?
I turn it off,
sort of thing.
Yeah, and also not only that, but in video mode, if you should be using an external microphone, but if you're not, you're going to hear that whining of the whatever their servo motors or whatever's inside the lens. Yes. You're going to hear that, so you should just turn it off. It's on a tripod.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Dave. They were very interesting tips. Probably the more impressive ones we've ever had on the show, actually.
Well, thanks.
Anything to add, guys, before we move on?
Yeah, what he said.
Yeah, I think he pretty well covered it.
I've got to say that the one thing that if you're going to buy a camera is get a camera that's got an LCD that flaps out. Because that ability to just turn it and stand above it and look down and those kind of things. I bought the D600 just to play, really, more than anything. I'm not a serious videographer at all, and I'm so pleased that I got one with the fold out LCD, because it's just impossible otherwise, especially when you're old and blind, to focus properly.
Yeah, I really wanted the 5D Mark III to come out with a flip out screen like this, you know, the other Rebels, but they didn't, because I think it has to do with weather proofing and stuff like that. They didn't want to put that in there and have it leak water or something.
But it leaks light, why not?
I'm sure there's a $500 solution.
Black sticky tape.
Black sticky tape. Well, everyone, this show and every other show on the network is brought to you by our wonderful friends at uk2.net. They really do keep us going, and if you could support us by supporting them, we'd be much appreciated. If you just go to our main website and scroll down and find the click through link, You'll see all the services they have to offer. And we've got some voucher codes for you, many voucher codes for you. If you just stick with me here for a minute, every single one, you just enter the name British Tech followed by one of the following. DNS will get you free DNS for up to 2 years. Domains will give you 20% off domain registry. VPN will get you 50% off your first month of VPN service. Server will get you £50 off any gigabit server on any contract length. That's an online deal only, however. And finally, VPS, you'll get first month free when purchasing entry-level VPS or the same amount equivalent of £8.95 off the purchase price. Like I say, they really are a friend of the network, and if you can support us by supporting them, we'd be greatly appreciated. So, guys, where can we get hold of you, Chris?
You can get a hold of me on the Twitters at Forsmack, and you can also read my highly amazing,
award-winning,
extremely informative writing on ArsTechnica.com.
Good stuff. Ewan?
Yeah.
You can get me on the Twitters at Ewan Rankin and E-W-E-N-R-A-N-K-I-N. And you can get me on, you can follow the network on British Tech News on Twitter as well. And you can get me for commercial photography work at ewanrankin.co.uk.
Nice. And for once, last but not least, Alex.
Oh, yeah, I'm not last. Wahey. Right, just get me on Alex G. Fox on Twitter if you'd like. Please be kind.
Fat chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dave, where can we get hold of you, sir?
LearningDSLRvideo.com. I've got all my links to Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff there. And thanks for letting me come on the show. This is a lot of fun. I always like talking about geeky camera stuff.
Well, it was a pleasure having you. I hope you come back again sometime in the
future. Yeah, you bet.
Absolutely, because a lot of people are now starting to use DSLRs for video, as you know, because doing it yourself. So it'd be great to get you on.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Future shows.
Well, none of us know anything about videos, really. Well, Chris is a bit better than the rest of us, but me and Alex certainly.
Mate, me and you have been questioning whether we know anything about photography.
We leave that to other people.
My name's Carl Madden. You can follow me on Twitter at Clausio101, which Chris.
Oh, well.
Chris has done today.
I wasn't following you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just always see you in my Twitter stream.
Yeah.
In his dreams. He sees you in his dreams, he meant to say.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to let you all get back to whatever you're doing in your daily lives, but I'm going to go for a nice swim in a pool now.
And watch the Max show.
Drink a beer.
You're going to drink beer? It's 10 a.m., dude.
So?
It's been holding back until now.
It's on holiday, yeah.
You have got a problem, man.
He's in Florida. He's in Florida. He practically has to have a beer this early just to get through the day.
That's it, guys. That's our show this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Stay safe till next week. Goodbye.